Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Trigger warning. This podcast contains descriptions of various abusive situations. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to the Preacher Boys podcast, a podcast shedding light on decades of mental, physical, and sexual abuse within the independent fundamental Baptist movement. The testimonies shared on this podcast are told from the personal experience and perspective of the survivors. Not all legal outcomes are known or final. Any suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. Now, here is your host, Eric Skwarzynski.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Preacher Boys podcast. Today's guest is Erica Smith. She's been a sex educator for 23 years. And in 2019, she developed a program called the Purity Culture Dropout, where she educates people who grew up with a lack of sexual education in restrictive religious environments. Of course, she was a perfect fit for the show, and I'm so excited to share this conversation with you. Stay tuned to the very end. She talks a little bit about a new book she's working on to provide compassionate sex education to those who never received it, and she tells you how you can find out more about her programs and connect with her online. But without further ado, here's my conversation with Erica Smith. Erica, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, I'm excited to have this conversation, and I'm hoping this gives me enough street cred to finally get my Balesa sponsorship, because everybody that's outspoken against purity culture gets these vibrator deals where they get to promote. And I'm like, I've hawked meal kits. I've got to try something different. So hopefully this gives me enough cred to go down that route. But
that would be pretty cool. Yeah, you'll get some free stuff, and it's always a good promo to do.
No, I always laugh because like everybody I see in this space like gets that promo eventually. And I'm like, I'm the only one. I don't even want it, but now I'm like the only one that hasn't had it. So there we are. I did get a I did get a offer for a like a Hims. It wasn't Hims, but it was like a Hims style product. And my wife's like, but I don't want people to think that you struggle with it. And I was like, yeah, I could talk about it though. So
you can talk about it.
I passed on that one. But anyway, I'm glad to have you on the show. As people heard in the intro, a little bit about your work. You've been working as a sex educator since 2000 and switched in 2019, or really pivoted into people that experience purity culture. What was it that you saw as a sex educator that made you go, we should narrow in some focus on this? There's some things to talk about.
Yeah. So there's kind of, you know, a long answer to this question, which I'm just going to give you, which is, as somebody who worked in the field of sex education and in sexual health care and in HIV prevention, I was always seeing ways that people who weren't raised with good sex education were suffering unnecessarily. And it was also very easy to see who in America was attempting to really control the narrative around sexuality and control the education and access to education. So I was seeing all through my career, like, essentially the religious right in America is trying to restrict access to this info, is trying to restrict healthcare, and it has really dire consequences for people. And that's something I noticed from the time, you know, that I was in college or even high school. And the reason that I began focusing specifically on people who were raised in purity culture, it is partially because I was looking for something new for myself career-wise, honestly, not to not be a sex educator,
sure,
but for some for 17 years, I had a job where I very specifically worked with adolescents and young people who were incarcerated. So kids in detention in Philadelphia. And I was like, I'm ready to focus on a new population. And it was right around the time that Linda K. Klein's book Pure came out.
No.
And I started reading all about it. I read the book. And then I had a very small Instagram presence at the time. I had like 4,000 followers or something. And I asked people one day, like, have you been affected by religious trauma and purity culture when it comes to sex? And the response I got was astounding. Like, so many people came forward and were like, yes, this has affected me. These are the ways it has affected me. And I also don't know how to move forward. And I don't know where to get good information. And the need became really apparent. So within, I don't know, a few weeks of really kind of engaging around this topic, I was like, I could create a sex ed program specifically for people in this situation. And it was inspired by Linda K. Klein's book and also by the conversations I was having on social media. And that's where it really started.
Yeah. And just for context for you, I've listened to you on a couple different podcasts, and you said you were like, your family sounds kind of loosely evangelical, but it doesn't sound like
not at
were.
All. Actually.
Oh, they were.
No, okay. I wasn't raised.
Holidays or something to church. I was listening to like American Christian as
yeah.
You have to understand. I'm from fundamentalist background. So I'm like, you were just an evangelical. You were like one foot in, you know?
No, I will tell you how removed from this kind of theology I was that I'm from a family that I call casually Christian. So we celebrate Christian holidays, but in a very commercial and secular way.
Gotcha.
And we would occasionally go to church on Christmas Eve, and occasionally, that's it. I went to a couple of vacation Bible schools with friends. I went to Awana for like a couple days with a friend. But I didn't have a strong religious upbringing at all. To me, I always say that I was raised with a God that wasn't scary. It was like we understood God to be this like benevolent figure in heaven. And that's sure. Where your grandma goes when she dies is like she meets God. But it would have never.
Depends
ever
on your grandma, a... right?
It depends on your grandma. But like the concept of hell was so vague to me that in my mind, yeah. It was like only murderers and Hitler go to hell. That's it. Kids don't. I was never afraid of that. So my orientation to religion is so different than 99.9% of my clients.
So you had really no context for the purity culture extremism until you started digging in from the perspective mm-hmm. of a sex educator.
Yeah.
When you ask the question on social media, obviously the response tells you something. But were you asking from a place of, I've dealt with a few people that have experienced negative harm from it? Or was it something where it's like, I'm going to ask and just see if this is an area of interest. And oh, I guess there is. Like, let me dig in then.
It was a little bit of both. Like, obviously, from working in this field, and that includes I worked in an abortion clinic early in my career. And, you know, so I dealt with protesters, I dealt with threats, and I also dealt with clients of the clinic. Women having abortions who were deeply religious and would talk to me about it. So I knew that there was a need for addressing this issue, but I was definitely trying to understand how deeply people were affected because, again, it was not my lived experience. And what was interesting to me is how the people starting to speak out about purity culture were by and large like, millennials who had been raised in it and were now taking a look back and were people that were like, well, now I'm in my own marriage. I'm having my own children and I'm just realizing how toxic this truly was. And those are the voices that really, really interested me and spoke to me because it was like, you know, before I would encounter people that didn't seem to be aware that their religious upbringing had had this effect on them because they were just, you know, there were like kids I worked with that were like, well, yeah, I was never taught that. But the new conversation happening was people who were like, I am fully aware now as an adult that this was harmful. And they were able to like point out all the ways that it was harmful. And that was so interesting to me. It was like really a just a wave of, you know, like the voices of deconstruction, as I'm sure you're deeply familiar, like more people were talking about it. And I was like, oh, wow. So evangelical folks or Southern Baptists or any, you know, anyone raised in a high control religion, they're now adults looking back and being like, this wasn't okay.
Yeah. So I sent you an email kind of sharing that I had polled my audience, and I already kind of knew the temperature of much of my audience, you know, 300 plus episodes in now. I've heard a variety of these stories, but posing the question, I was still blown away by like, okay, the next day there's like 200 responses here of just stories that are really heartbreaking. And there's all kinds of categories of effects. There's, you know, shame, there's body dysmorphia, eating disorders are mentioned, struggles with, you know, connecting with the spouse emotionally, all these different categories. When you got this wave of responses, was it a big melting pot of different issues? Or did you notice like two or three that were like, this seems to be an issue that everyone deals with. This seems to be an issue that half of them deal with. This is an issue that maybe a third does. Like, what were some of the primary like big red alarms that went off when you sent out that poll?
Some of the main answers I got were just so much shame, people having shame about sex in general, and then people feeling like they had huge gaps in knowledge about their bodies, about sexual function, about pleasure, about like the medical side of sexuality. And so there were a lot of people who were like, you know, first of all, I feel shame, but also I feel like there are just things that I was never taught that are severely lacking and affecting my ability to have any semblance of a enjoyable or healthy sex life. So those are like the main things.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend the other day on another podcast, and I just said the thing that it's funny and sad to me now, but the amount of shame that I felt as a teenager was so disproportionate to like the amount of bad things I was doing as a teenager.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, that shame, I think there's two facets. There's like the shame of, oh, this is a thing that I'm not supposed to be interested in yet, or this is a thing I'm not supposed to be interested in the way that I am, or this is not the type of person I'm told I'm supposed to be interested in. But then beyond that, like you said, you have the millennial crowd, you have, which is a lot of my audience, you know, they're sitting there now with this shame of, okay, I don't know what a labia is. And at this point, I'm too afraid to ask, you know, like there's that next layer
and that
of
is
this.
Exactly my specialty. Like, I love nothing more than to gently, compassionately answer questions that people feel embarrassed to have.
Right.
And it's like, there should be, I mean, it's as, again, I fully, as an outsider to this culture, I feel so angry when I see, you know, people were shamed for all of the sexual thoughts and feelings that they may have not even been having. And then you reach a point where for some people, they didn't engage in relationships or sexuality because of this teaching. So they enter a new phase in life where now they feel left behind and they feel embarrassed for not having engaged in sexual relationships. So like the late bloomer crowd and the people that consider themselves older, quote unquote, virgins. And I always put that word in quotations because of, you know, there's a lot to unpack about the what it means to be a virgin. I see people who were like, well, I followed all the rules and I just kept following them. And now I'm 25, 35, 45 or older, and I've never had a romantic relationship or a sexual experience. And that makes them feel a new type of shame. And I'm like, it makes me so angry because none of these things are and should be inherently shameful. And that's really where I love to come in and be like, doesn't matter how old you are, we're going to get you sorted with this information and we're going to build your confidence so that you can, you know, experience your sexuality the way you would like to.
There's a specific hiccup I want to talk about in those conversations that I've seen. But first, I just want to ask for someone listening who maybe is the person that's going, I wouldn't want to raise my hand in a room, but I'm listening to a podcast and I hope they say this. When you're dealing with, let's say, first aid on this issue, and you're going, okay, you're entering into this arena where you grew up in an environment that was super sheltered, full of shame, you have no education. What's the first one or two steps that you recommend someone do that's an easy, actionable thing to start connecting with that part of themselves that was off limits from themselves for so long?
The first thing I usually recommend people do is get some clarity on what they actually believe now, and to understand that it's okay to not know, and it's okay to have values that sort of change and shift as you get more information. But a lot of people come to me and they say, well, I know I don't believe the old stuff. I know I don't believe those values that were given to me, but I don't know what I believe now. And some people actually say, I just want a new set of rules. I just want to know how to be. Can you give me a new set of rules? And absolutely not. The important thing is that you get into
yourself. I'm glad you said absolutely not. I got nervous. I was like,
oh, no.
Please don't prescribe rules.
I am not going to prescribe rules. In fact, I'm always like, I live out my own sexual values through my life, and you need to do the same. And so this involves actually asking yourself, what do I believe about these teachings? Do I believe that, you know, I can only act sexually in accordance with biblical guidelines? Do I believe that I shouldn't have sex unless I'm in a heterosexual, God-ordained marriage? Do I believe that it's wrong to masturbate? And I want people to, you know, an actionable step is to like write about this stuff, journal about it, get it down on paper. Like, what do you think and believe? Because then you can start to make some decisions in alignment with those values.
And asking why you believe them, you know, which is such a, you know, this is something in that, and I've gotten tired of the word deconstruction. I say it every time I mention it. But it, to me, it implies this idea that there's an endpoint, like, oh, I fully deconstructed and now I know.
Right.
Whereas to me, the longer, uglier way to say it that I think is more helpful is deconstruction is constantly taking new information, processing it, and applying what you believe is right. And that's something you should be doing till you're in the grave. Like, that is a lifelong process. And sexuality is no different in that journey. I want to talk about the hiccup I kind of mentioned earlier, which is, and I saw this when I announced you're coming on the show, there's some people who are very against this conversation, who maybe are against abuse in a very clearly definable way, but they don't perceive the way that people are raised to be abusive, or the way that, you know, sexuality is talked about to be that way. And on the flip side of that, too, because of the beliefs they hold from fundamentalism, they look at people like yourself, sex educators, people who talk about things that were very taboo, like homosexuality or pornography or down the list. And they point to those people and go, they're groomers, they're this, they're that. Like, how do you deal with someone who has the default programming of fearing these conversations, but also has identified there's hurt and we need to work on it? Like, it seems like a rock in a hard place of trying to get someone to budge either direction.
Yeah, that is a great question. And it is interesting to me because usually by the time people are comfortable engaging with my work, by the time folks are okay with giving me a follow or even reaching out to work with me directly, they have usually already gone through that. And they're on the other side where they're like, well, I want to hear from a sex educator. I want to hear from a secular sex educator. The people that are where you're describing, who might still see me as a danger, I actually don't spend a lot of time addressing that directly, because I'm like, I mean, it would take a lot of energy, first of all, to argue with everyone who wants
full-time
to argue.
Full-time job, yeah.
Yeah. But the thing that I think is really important to say is that if you feel like what you learned about sexuality has damaged you, I want folks to also understand that those same conditions that you learned about sexuality in are actually the conditions that create opportunities for abuse and exploitation. whereas getting information about sexuality as a child, as a young person, as an adult, reduces the chance that you can be preyed upon, because you will have knowledge about your body. You will know about boundaries. You will know what's right and wrong and what's okay. And you are less of a ideal victim if you are armed with knowledge about your body and consent. Whereas if you are given silence and fear and shame around sexuality, then it is so easy to manipulate and prey upon those vulnerable people, whether they are children or adults. And so it does, I think the label groomer applied to folks like myself is just the most, I mean, I can't take it seriously at all, because it's just the most egregiously inaccurate thing, because my work prevents abuse and exploitation. Because knowledge and feeling like you have some sense of control are like paramount when it comes to preventing abuse.
Yeah, no, I co-sign all that.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
There was a little mob of people that were, you know, and those pop up, you know, and they were just me hosting this conversation was like such a big issue. And I was like,
interesting.
This is literally the opposite of all the things that you're saying that it is. Yeah. This is, like you said, the knowledge is power. It's your defense.
It is.
And like, we believe that in the church, in every other category, when it comes to knowing scripture, know this, be always ready to give an answer, all those things that are spouted all the time. And then when it comes to, okay, let me understand my own body, like, which is crazy that that's being gatekept from anybody.
It really is.
Like, that's a danger to you.
And that, I mean, I'll never believe that. I also just, I have a hard time understanding it, but I know that it's fear. Like, it's fear of the unknown. It's fear of someone with a different approach. You know, if people have been taught that any discussion of sexuality or any embracing of sexuality is going to lead to like moral lawlessness, where you're just going to the slippery slope argument. Like, well, if you talk to someone about sex, then all they're going to do is they're going to get into pornography. They're going to go to orgies. They're going to do X, Y, and Z. And like, personally, I believe that you can make those decisions for yourself in an empowered way. But if you're not a person that wants to do that stuff, learning about sexuality isn't going to send you into a life of depravity, because we have to trust that we can make decisions that are aligned with our own morals and beliefs. And I firmly believe that you can do that without a Bible.
It's a funny thought that the conversation around these topics is going to change your like your core interests in like a real way. Like, it's kind of the conversation
really afraid
about
of that.
Right. It's like when people are afraid of, you know, people being aware that gay people exist. And it's like, it's not going to turn you gay. Like, that's a radical transformation of your identity. You know,
exactly.
It's an odd thing to fear.
I just want to interject something. I do address this fear with clients sometimes, because I think there are times that folks want to work with me, but they're afraid that it's going to mean that they have to do a bunch of things sexually that they don't want to do, or, you know, become interested in practices or lifestyles that they're not interested in. And I always tell them, like, the antidote to purity culture isn't, well, now I'm going to live the opposite. It's not like, well, I was raised in this restrictive way, and now I need to go and do all the sexual things that I find really out there. The antidote to purity culture is to find your own values and beliefs and begin to live them out around sexuality. And that's going to look different for everyone. So I do work with people that end up having sexual interests and practices that might be considered pretty taboo. But I also work with people that are like, I'm a monogamous married person and I just want to have better sex in my relationship. You don't have to join sex parties and change your pronouns to work with me. It's like, sure. I just want people to be themselves and to feel the most happy and content with their decision making, and then to have all the information that allows them to make decisions from an empowered place.
Yeah, that's such a big thing. I've talked to a couple people who are adult content creators, and I've asked them, as someone who is always concerned, given the nature of my show, always concerned about abuse and industries that can be predatory. And obviously, there are very predatory environments, in that world, just like there is in the church or any other business context,
any other
whatsoever.
Yep.
But one of the answer that I've gotten when I say, like, hey, have you experienced, exploitation? Have you experienced this? Like, when you have those discussions, the default response I get is something akin to, well, the difference between purity culture and this is I'm choosing to be objectified. Another person said, this was right for me. And the point was that nobody was telling me what to do anymore. And it doesn't mean it's right for everybody. It just means that you don't have to do what you don't want to do anymore, whether that's dressing up or dressing down.
Exactly.
And I think that was such a pivotal change for me in understanding that really beyond the issue really doesn't go further beyond taking ownership for yourself. And I think that's like, if that's being threatened in any environment, whether secular or religious, that's a big red flag. Like, that's the danger zone to avoid.
I agree. I'm
curious, dealing with, obviously, men and women are impacted by purity culture. I'm curious what the distinction you've seen between how it impacts, like that hyper-sheltered, shameful environment. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that affect men and women in very different ways, or is it very similar?
I'd say that there are some main similarities, the kind of like distrust of sexuality, fear of sexuality, lack of information, but then it does manifest differently as well. So, women who are raised in purity culture, we know that women are taught that their bodies are the problem, that their bodies are tempting, their bodies are dangerous, their bodies are obscene just by existing. Whereas, men are taught that your mind is dangerous, your desires, your attractions, what you might want to look at, that masturbation and pornography are like the absolute worst things a guy can do. So those lessons definitely manifest differently in men and women. When I speak to men, and I'm always so happy to work with men, I really encourage men to like reach out and to address this stuff. And I think it's sometimes harder for men, but I'm very happy to welcome male clients. The issues that they often want to talk about are, they have been taught so much fear around, like, that they're going to accidentally harm or exploit somebody sexually, that they're like, I don't know how to approach a woman and tell her that I would like to date her. I don't know how to approach a woman and tell her that she's attractive. Like, any expression of that was taught to them, like, this is predatory, this is bad, you can't do that. Unless you're literally about to marry, like you're looking for a wife or something. So I do get a lot of men who have so much shame about, like, just wanting to express that a woman is attractive, about wanting to get themselves out there dating. And then, of course, a lot of shame around masturbation or the use of pornography, or, and I'm not talking about this. I mean, we could talk for hours about the pornography conversation and how that manifests. But, I will talk to men who say, like, I looked at porn a couple times a year and my wife and my pastor insisted that I go to a rehab. And so, like, I've never had a woman say that to me. So there's a big difference in that area.
I love that you mentioned the fact that guys leaving that world are scared. Because one of the things that I've seen is that there's kind of two extremes. There's the guys that take the teaching in purity culture and get married. And, you know, to give you the example I've said on the show before, you know, I was one of those people in high school, watched porn and thought, you know, I remember praying at the altar, like, God, take my eyesight if I look again, you know, which it was serious then. But, you know, now I look back and go like, that's so crazy to feel that much shame for having a natural interest in women. And then I remember talking to my youth pastor, and which again, talking to a 30-year-old who's not your parent about your porn viewing habits is also another thing we talk about. But there's a lot of things you're just like
dynamic.
Yeah, I was talking to him alone in a dark room about what I was watching. But I, you know, I told him, and he said, you know, if you're struggling with porn, you really need to fight this, but you're going to be able to get married soon when you're an adult, and then you'll be able to use your wife. And that terminology is really something that I think guys carry into these marriages, leaving these environments where it's like, I have basically a human sex toy to use to curb this addiction that I have, or addiction that I perceive that I have.
That was the word said to you.
That's the exact quote. He said, eventually you'll be able to get married and you'll be able to use your wife.
So I'll tell you this, Eric. I always say to my clients, nothing about sex surprises me. I have heard everything under the sun about sexuality. I have a graduate degree in sexuality education. You could tell me that you're into the most obscure thing sexually, and I'm not going to flinch. But it's when I hear the things that people were told from their religious communities about sex that I cannot hide my shock. And I feel like it's been a while since somebody has stopped me dead in my tracks, and you just did with that.
You're welcome. There you go. It's something I think about more and more the older that I get. And it's one of those things, like, you know, I was probably 16 when he shared that with me. And, you know, I'm thankful that I understood enough before getting married a couple years later that, you know, it was the flip side where I was like, that's not healthy. At least I knew enough to know that. But then I went into our relationship, which I won't go too detailed into it, but I've shared this part before. But the issue that we had in the beginning of our marriage was I was terrified of accidentally being abusive, hurting, like, which that's the better of the extremes.
It is.
But it still has its own list of issues that come with it. And, you know, and so that's one of the things where, you know, I look at the two extremes there where it's like, and I feel like I've been talking forever, but you've got the people that go, you have the people that go into marriage saying, now I have something to use. And I think that's a lot of people in that world. And then you have the people that go, I am so scared of being those guys that now I'm scared to initiate. I'm scared to do anything outside of the most vanilla, calm, you know, way of expressing this.
On the cheek. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like both of those extremes are so harmful. And I think it gets missed in the conversation where in the conversation, purity culture and patriarchal religious environments, I think people go, hey, this actually serves men. But the more I get into it, the more I go, it's not really serving them. It's really robbing them sexually. It's robbing them in relationships. It's robbing them emotionally. Because although you have the power, it's stealing so many experiences that are healthy and way more fun than the alternatives. And I was curious if you'd seen that play out in clients and in people you've dealt with.
100%. And I know that, you know, the messages that women and also LGBTQ people receive from purity culture are incredibly damaging, but there is nothing positive for men. Like, men are not given, it's not good for anybody. It's harmful for anyone of any gender. And, you know, the thing about being told, like, well, then you can get married and use your wife, is you weren't given tools about how to relate to another do you relate to your wife in a way of she's a partner, she has her full humanity, she gets to make decisions. And, you know, sexual experiences are not one person doing a thing to another. It's, and that's what you're taught in purity culture, that one person is acting upon another to take something from them, to hurt them, to rob them of their, rob them of their value, essentially. Where in reality, sex is a co-created mutual experience where two people are doing something together. And that is the information that you weren't given. It's like here's where grooming as a word comes in. You're grooming men to be abusers. You're grooming men to override their partner's autonomy, their partner's pleasure, their partner's ability to say no. You know, there's no consent in that situation. And then you're expecting, you know, I mean, I know IFB teachings from some of the clients I've worked with are very extreme. And it's just, yeah, there's nothing in that that was setting you up for success as a man, other than under that very specific, like, IFB parameter.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even the idea of sex for pleasure is such a taboo. And it was, you get varieties of those messages. So you have the people that are like, you know, I'm sure you've heard the preaching, you know, my smoking hot wife and this, and you know, there's that realm. And then, which again, the older I get, the more I go, oh, that's gross. You say at a youth conference. But then, you know, beyond that, you also have the people that are like, our only goal is to pump out as many kids as possible, you know? So like you have a big spectrum of things, but at the end of the day, it's all in service of, you know, this dominant person's role and then this submissive person's role. And that is always male and female in the Independent Baptist kind of context. Right. But like you said, it doesn't serve either. And it trains abusers 100%. I feel a lot of empathy for what I call the accidental abusers, where they're acting in a way they think is godly. Just like I feel bad for the accidental victims who are going, well, yeah, it hurts, but you know, that's what it is. Or yeah, it's this, or, you know, or it's for him. I don't really enjoy it. Like both sides of that coin are getting a really raw deal. When you're dealing with that in a relationship context, I have to imagine that's probably the most difficult piece of this is when you've got two people raised with their own gender role that's very rigid. One is questioning, one's not. One is realizing something's broken, one's not. How do you navigate someone getting in touch with themselves sexually when they have a partner who doesn't even understand that something's broken? Like they have a husband that's going, it's working for me, you know, and she's going, it's not working for me. Or you have a husband that's going, I don't even know if I should be interested in this because it feels wrong if it's not for having kids. Like, how do you go about navigating that where there's two parties that are growing? Just in life, we grow in different speeds and different rates. So it takes time to catch up here and there.
I have had this situation, but in this situation, I've always been working. Well, actually, that's not true, that I've always been working with the female half of a straight couple. I have had sessions with men who were like, I have evolved past these teachings, but my wife hasn't. More typically, though, I work with women who often their husbands are along on the deconstruction journey, but there are times when they feel their husbands are still pretty in the conservative religious life. So in that situation, I mean, I can only focus on the person in front of me and support them in the questions that they're asking and support them in the information that they're seeking and trust that they will make whatever decisions or adjustments in their life they feel are necessary. You know, it's not my business to ever tell people what decisions to make. And that includes, you know, I'm growing apart from my spouse. Should I leave them? And I have had so many conversations with clients where I feel like they're they're thinking about it. And coming to me is a part of that process for them. And so for those reasons, I love to hear from people after our work has ended together, because sometimes they will say, I was just going in a different direction, and after X amount of time, we realized we needed to separate. But I feel like I have to focus on the person that's in front of me and just give them as much empowerment as I can and trust that they will navigate things with their spouse.
Yeah. I want to speak, because we've referenced throughout the conversation, you know, heterosexual couples, like there's definitely plenty of issues to talk about. I think there's a whole nother layer. You know, we've gotten into the shame of just sex in general, but I know from my community of listeners, like there's plenty of people who grew up hating gay people and then realize, mm-hmm. wait a minute, you know, like this is a little bit of self-directed hate here. Like yeah. there's some shame here that I'm feeling. How have you seen that impact from purity culture affect people who are in the LGBTQ community that are maybe sitting there going like, okay, not only was there deep-rooted shame about this topic, there is deep-rooted shame about feeling the way that I feel about the type of people that I'm interested in across yeah. the board. Because to me, like, again, it's like trying to understand the female perspective of growing up, and this is one thing to grow, but then like to have your very existence be treated as an issue is like a mm-hmm. level of just badness I can't comprehend. But I'm sure you've heard countless stories of people who've experienced that sort of thing. So what have you noticed with that demographic, and what would your words of advice be? Because that's a lot to unravel and unpack.
Yes. It is. And I mean, I do specialize in this. I run specialized support groups for people who identify under the LGBTQ umbrella who grew up in purity culture. And having worked with so many of those folks, some of the main things I see are anger and grief at the years they spent not having any clarity on their identity or not being able to even begin to question it. So there's a lot of that late in life shame, like, I can't believe I didn't realize that I was a lesbian until I was 40, and I've lost all this time, and it's basically over for me now, and I don't even need to come out because what am I going to do at this age? There's a lot of that stuff. And I always tell people, like, it's not that there was like a door to understanding your sexuality and you chose not to walk through it. It's that door didn't even exist. The door wasn't visible for you. You were in a situation in which it was never even going to be the most remote possibility that you could understand a queer identity. So I do a lot of like, try not to be so hard on yourself. Everyone has a different journey of their sexuality, and this is yours. And I also do a lot of encouraging people to forgive themselves for their former homophobic views. That's not going to get you anywhere. If you were drowning yourself in guilt and shame that you used to hate gay people or used to protest against gay marriage, like, what's done is done. You were doing those things because you understood that that was right at the time. It was your only option. You were told that was correct. You know, it doesn't mean you're a shitty person. Like, please forgive yourself for any homophobia or transphobia that you once perpetuated. And doing those things does not mean that you don't get to access your LGBTQ community now. And it doesn't mean that you don't get to be happy now. In fact, I mean, I think so many people that understand themselves as LGBTQ are people that were raised to feel homophobic. That doesn't mean you can't be happy now. So I hear people saying all the time that they feel guilt about that, and that they're like, maybe that means I don't deserve to come out. And it doesn't. You get to write your own story now. And the beauty of that is you have so many years to come to happiness and understanding about who you are, and to seek relationships that fulfill you. And just because you didn't do it when you were 18, doesn't mean that all is lost. The amount of later in life LGBTQ people or people that understand themselves as late bloomers is astounding. So, I mean, I have endless pep talks for people who come to understand a queer identity after coming out of a high control religion. To me, if you are listening to this podcast and that's you, you are some of the most amazing, brave, and badass people I have ever met. I'm a woman who identifies as queer, and it was a struggle for me, and I didn't grow up in a religious family. It's just a struggle in this world. So to understand that there are people out there that had to claw themselves out of like a hole of shame and fear to get to where they are, to claim their identity proudly, I think you're some of the most strong, resilient people out there, and you are absolutely people that I want to be in community with. So welcome. Welcome to being LGBT. I'm here for you when you want to come out, and so is the rest of the queer community.
I feel like there would need to be some like swelling music as you went through that. And like a national anthem was about to say, get up, everybody.
I have so much love for this population. Yeah. And just so much compassion.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been such a, and I want to echo what you said. I want to talk to the straights out there. You know, it's one of the things where I love what you said about, you know, forgiving yourself for beliefs that you had that were not chosen. I mean, that's the thing that I think is, it's difficult leaving these environments because, like I've said earlier with some of the things that I heard, the older I get and becoming a parent and becoming the age of the people that taught me those things, like every single, it feels like every week I'm like, well, that was really bad. Like yeah. There's some new layer of just horrible things that you're like, okay, that was bad. That was bad. And then on top of that, you're going like, oh, I believe that. I said that. Like I, you know, one of my best friends growing up, and I'll ask him, I'll link to what he's doing if he wants to be mentioned or not. But like one of my best friends growing up, like I look back at all the homophobic stuff I said as a kid, and a couple of my friends now have come out. One of my friends, though, he's like one of my best friends. We talked last year and, you know, he was kind of breaking down. He's like, yeah, I came out to my family and, you know, I'm working on building this like campground for gay men in Arkansas because there's not many, you know, outlets for them. It's a very conservative area. And I was like, you know, I'll send him like weird marketing ideas and like all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I beat myself up for things that I'm sure I said around him at a time he was already wrestling with identity. And he said those things too, you know, in that environment. But what I can do now is support him for who he is now and who he's always been. And I can not block the number and I can have the conversation. And, you know, I think a lot of people in that position who relate to that would go, every time I talk, I need to go, I'm so sorry, and this, and run back through this long list of things.
Yeah.
Show where your flag is planted now and support them where they're at now. Like that's the best like penance. And I don't want to treat it like it's that kind of relationship, but that kind of penance,
but that's
is the
best way to move forward.
Right.
That's how to repair. It's, you know, your friend isn't going to benefit if every time you talk, you profusely apologize and then he has to accept your apology.
Yeah, like right, make me feel better about what I did.
Yeah. He benefits from your ongoing allyship now. And I tell people that in my work is like, you might have said homophobic things, you might have done homophobic things, you might have perpetuated beliefs that you no longer have, and the best way to turn that ship around is just to move forward and live out the values that you have now.
Right.
That are much more open and loving and supportive.
Right. Yeah. And on the flip side, have some empathy for people on that journey. You know, like I think sometimes we look at people and go, they still believe this. And sometimes I feel that way about people. But, you know, to co-opt a biblical phrase, it's like the so too were some of you. You know, it's like when you see the aunt post something, you're like, that doesn't feel very, you know, like people are on their journey. I think it's good to have conversations, educate and help people, but also understand that it is a lot to rewire, especially like you said, when you get to 40, 50, culturally, there's like relationships, religion, like there's so many things you're pushing reverse on that feel, I have to imagine, very intimidating, not being a 40-year-old myself yet. I have to imagine that would be a lot. It feels a lot like that now, you know, at 28, it feels like, oh man, it's let's reset again, you know, let's redo this.
Yeah. Honestly, you said something that brought to mind your earlier question where you were like, there are people that like are upset I'm talking to you that might think of sex educators as groomers, and what would you say to them? And honestly, I have compassion, because those beliefs come from fear that someone intentionally planted into you.
Yeah.
So when I know that there are people that are think my work is blasphemous, and that just means I'm not going to argue with you. It's not for you right now. It might be for you someday, but I'm not your enemy. I want the same things that I think everyone wants, which is people to live free of exploitation and to be happy. So I do have compassion for those who are very much afraid of me, because we live in a culture where those culture war fears are being stoked constantly.
Yeah. And I love that about your work. And this is a good parting thing to say, but I really appreciate about your work that you're not overtly prescriptive in what you say is going to be helpful. Even reading, because I tried watching one of your interviews, playing devil's advocate in my mind with like assuming the worst possible intent of what you're saying, you know, to try to just think of things to address. And it's like, it's extremely hard to look at your content and go, she's advocating for everybody to do A, B, or C, you know,
almost
everything you share is, this isn't necessarily for you. This isn't for everybody. This is this, but I appreciate that you're having productive conversations that are guiding people. It's the difference between teaching people how to think, which is what a lot of people do, mind you. People leave the church and go, you need to be this type of atheist and this type of this and this, believe this and be polyamorous. And like they go down a long list of things. But then there's other people like yourself who go, that might be a path for you, or it might not. Let's talk about it. Let's be educated and make an informed decision. And I think that's really, really helpful. As we wrap up, I think you mentioned you're working on a book. Is there any any spoilery, sneak peek, exclusive things we can expect from the book that you want to drop on this podcast? Oh,
I'm happy to share. The book won't be out until next year, but it's a sex education book for people who were raised in purity culture. And the title is You Deserve to Know, because I do believe that people deserve to have information about their bodies and about how their bodies work and about sexuality in general. So I'm taking all of the big topics that my clients want to know about most and the things that people struggle about most who were raised in a high control religion. And I am writing the book for you, where if you're like, no one ever told me about birth control, what do I need to know? There it is. And it's also written with your needs in mind as somebody who was taught that birth control is all abortion or that birth control is sinful. Like everything is geared towards the person who was raised to fear all of this information. So it's a very compassionate book. I'm going to cite my sources. There's facts, there's research, but it is a sex education book. And I will also include, I do have a sexual values workbook that I wrote in 2020, and that's available on my website. That's a really popular offering of mine. So when you said, like, what can people do? Clarify your sexual values. That's why I wrote that workbook. But my book that's coming out next year is going to include some of those prompts where people can, you know, if you're reading about fantasy and masturbation, you can also ask yourself some of these questions about your beliefs on those topics.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that come out. I'll have to get you back on the show once the book is
I will
written,
definitely come back.
and you're in the craziness of your book touring. I would love to squeeze you in and talk about it. But thank you so much. Yeah, I really appreciate this conversation. I appreciate so much of your content. Where's the best place for people to connect with you? Just let them know that, and then we can wrap there.
Yeah. So my website is very easy. It's purityculturedropout.com. But I am quite active on Instagram. On Instagram, you can find me by my name, Erica Smith, sex ed, Erica spelled with a C. And those are the two main ways to reach out to me.
Perfect. I'll link to all those in the show notes. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And be sure to connect with Erica on Instagram and over on her website. But for now, I'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, please leave a review on iTunes and don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.